Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. Our guest today is Court Bauer. He's the CEO of Major League Wrestling, a company he founded in 2003, and then had a 13-year hiatus before bringing it back in 2017. In addition to booking and running his own company, he also started a podcast network, and he's just a really fun guy to just chat wrestling with and someone who I've always wanted to interview in a forum like this. As a reminder, Major League Wrestling is available Thursday on YouTube and Saturday on Dean Sports. So without further ado, here's the interview, Under the Ring with Court Bauer. Well, the world of MLW never stops, and neither does the world of Under the Ring. We're joined by the CEO and president of Major League Wrestling, Court Bauer, today. Court, welcome.
Hey, Phil. Good to be on.
Yeah, good to see you. So while we're recording this, Intimidation Games and the Aztec Underground haven't happened yet, but this will be posted later on. But just getting back in front of the crowds in Dallas and Charlotte and Philly, what's that been like so far? And it seems like you've had some nice audiences and some pretty unique matches.
Yeah, I mean, our first show back with crowds, we sold out weeks in advance. And it's interesting. It's then you've had like this up and down thing because you've seen COVID flare up, variants come into play. So I think there was like all this enthusiasm, like floodgates were opened this summer. And by the fall, there was a little bit of like caution in some places. And it all depends on really where you are. I mean, you have these flare-ups in different parts of the country. So depending on if we were in Texas or the Carolinas or in Philly, it's just a totally different vibe, and what people find acceptable going out and doing, it's totally different. So, you know, it's been an interesting process. There's no book you can go to say, okay, what do you do in this situation? You kind of, as we've done over the last 2 years, you just kind of see what's going to happen and just make the best judgment. But it's been great to have the fans back. The empty arena thing, which was always a novelty in wrestling, the old days of Jerry Lawler and Terry Funk, it was a cute novelty. I think everyone doesn't want to see an empty arena match probably for decades now. I think that was one match that we can put in the closet for a long time, mothball it, put it away, and hopefully we're back for good now moving forward.
MLW to me has always seemed like an interesting meeting place for a lot of talents, a lot of styles, some unique storytelling, some unique matches, or as you guys call them, fights. Having attended some of the cards at Melrose Ballroom, it's a really fun live atmosphere, good vibe. In this new world, this world of content, where do you kind of see MLW fitting and where do you see it going for the rest of this year and beyond?
That's a great question. So, yeah, I think right now content's king as everyone's starting to kick off a new streaming service or get more competitive in the linear space. And so for us, it's we want to be everywhere where our fans are, from social media, whether it's Instagram, Snap, you name it. We want to have a presence there. And you're seeing certain things blow up because of social media, and a lot of talents become recognized because of social media. So that's an important component to it. On the streaming and linear end, I think there's just everyone values sports content more than ever before. And I think now more than ever, fans are recognized by decision makers, whether it's at networks or streaming services. Wrestling fans mean a lot, and wrestling product means a lot to those services now more than ever. And there's a recognition that wrestling really has great value. And I don't think that was always the case. I think now it's a totally different world, a different climate. And then also there's a lot of wrestling fans now in key decision-making roles in these companies that wasn't the case when I started MLW in 2002. You had to really get over this huge hurdle to justify wrestling's presence, yet wrestling's been a part of the fabric of TV dating back to Gorgeous George and black and white TV. And then, you know, through cable and through pay-per-view, closed circuit, every step of the way, wrestling's been such an important part. And now I think the people in those roles are savvier, sophisticated, and also wrestling fans. And I think they get it.
And let's be honest, everybody's really a wrestling fan either. It's always a matter of just whether they're willing to admit it to their coworker or their boss. So I think that's kind of where those decisions got changed over time too.
Yeah. And I think if you love politics or follow politics like a religion, that's wrestling. You boil that down, that's wrestling. People cutting promos, getting their catchphrase out there to the world. It's you versus them. It's wrestling at its core. it's wrestling. That's why I think a lot of people, whether it's in Japan or Jesse Ventura, a lot of these wrestlers have migrated into politics. It's such an easy fit just to make that transition. Just got to know your audience, work them, get them into a frenzy, and sell them on something. And they're selling them on elect me. And so it's you couldn't get a more comparable blueprint if you're going to make a pivot from wrestling. Maybe politicians making a pivot to wrestling is going to be the next wave.
And now sports is entertainment itself, too. And I think that's kind of where some of the changes happened also.
Yeah,
and that,
sure.
You know, they're viewing it that way now. It's been interesting to see with so much talk of the forbidden door in wrestling and the open door policies kind of thing that some companies have had. You were pretty adamant about that as things started moving around with that you wanted MLW to be a place for those unique matches for people to come in and out. And you've been consistent with that. You know, for years, we've seen that so far with you guys, Bobby Fish, Killer mm-hmm. Cross, Roxy, TJP, and some others. But how has that been going for you guys, and where do you kind of see it?
Yeah, I like the open door policy where you tap free agents that are hitting the market, because I mean, unfortunately, so many, I mean, dozens and dozens of guys and women hit the market at a really difficult time in the world over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months. So there's just a flood of free agents out there. So, you know, not everyone's gonna be able to sign everyone, MLW, other companies. So we wanna be able to showcase them to our fans, get them in action and see if there's a good fit, or maybe there's that one really good match. And you can figure that out from a matchmaking creative point of view, that it clicks, it meshes in this moment in time, and go within and see where it takes you. So I like that freedom. It's a new tool on the tool belt for us. Doing things where you're collaborating with other organizations, it's harder domestically than it is internationally. Internationally is much easier. And so navigating those waters domestically is something that I'm kind of been very cautious with. Whereas, you know, with our international partners, be it AAA in Mexico, IWA Puerto Rico, All Japan, Pro Wrestling NOAH, et cetera, it's a lot easier. It's a lot more straightforward transactionally.
I was going to say that, you know, with the number of international partnerships you've had, when I was looking it up coming into this, there were so many of them. I was like, you know, this is kind of crazy how many different ones you've been able to do. And yeah. And you've been able to have other, you know, wrestlers from MLW travel to them, too.
Yeah. And I love that. I want to get our guys as much work, you know, part of our contracts. The spirit of our contracts is the least restrictive deals you can have while being on national TV and also 20 other countries. But you know, we allow our guys to work all the indies. They don't get booked through us. They go out there and use the TV time to go and get more work. We want our guys working, whether it's through our strategic partners abroad or just here in the States. I think that's really important. I think it's important for talent, whether young or at that mid-level of their career, to get their reps in, you know, and especially after having that period where for a year, 2 years, you weren't working in front of a crowd, because that's such a key component to doing this. And honing your skills is getting that interaction with the audience.
It seems like the key to running a wrestling company is just never say never. You know, any opportunity is always an opportunity.
For sure. I mean, every day you got to look at your business model and look at the climate in wrestling and kind of reassess, where is it going today? Because what I had planned yesterday may not click with what the here and now says.
I think what really caught my attention, you know, at least in some of your programming, was just Davey Richards the other day just noting his match with Hammerstone as something that he was proud of, because he's somebody that has so much respect within wrestling. You know, what's it like to kind of see that? Those kind of opportunities happening for you guys and having that on your programming?
Yeah, one of the biggest goals I had when we came out of the pandemic is to have high-end, high-caliber wrestling matches on the top of the card down to the bottom. I mean, we've always had our projects. We've had guys at different stages of their career, but I really wanted to up the quality of the in-ring. And in our open draft last June, Davey Richards and having him come into MLW and signing with us, and since then he's been so happy he signed an extension, speaks to that. And he's been such a great contributor in the locker room as a leader and in the ring with his work. It's been fantastic. And along with Hammerstone, those two had one of my favorite, if not my favorite, matches in MLW history dating back to 2002. I'm really proud of what they did out there. that was like a 25-minute classic. And Charlotte is the perfect was the perfect city to host it too. There's so much history, and they just embraced a match like that.
And Davey Richards is such a unique story too. When you look at his hiatus and then comeback, and then you realize, wait, this guy's going to like medical school in the meantime.
You know? Yeah, I mean, like that Monday, he was back in scrubs.
Right.
I mean, think about that. You know, on Saturday night, he was wrestling in Charlotte, having a classic match. Less than 48 hours later, he was in scrubs, back at it in St. Louis.
Yeah, I posed a question to him one day on Twitter. He was saying something about something he was studying for. I'm like, what are you studying exactly? Like, because I wasn't even sure totally, because I knew that was kind of where he went, but I didn't totally know what the story was. But yeah, great for him and great for Hammerstone to have that opportunity. Let's backtrack a little bit, because I'm not sure everybody listening to this or watching this kind of knows your entry into the pro wrestling business. And it's one of the more interesting ones I've heard. And we've talked about it before. When I asked you just one day, I was like, what is your backstory anyway? I know who you are, but I don't know how you got in. So it involves the Samoans in Pennsylvania. That involves a little bit of Gary Hart, and then kind of launching this company, and then it goes on the hiatus, and then it comes back. So if you had to give kind of a Cliff's Notes of who is Court Bauer, and the floor is yours.
All right, here we go. Yeah, I grew up in Westchester, New York, a huge wrestling fan. I grew up watching and only knowing of WWF in the 80s and 90s as a kid, because that's really all I had access to. And then you find out that there's a larger world. There's a NWA, which became WCW. And then you find out about this thing in Dallas. And I think it was the End of World Class. It was on ESPN and then Global and all these things. So I loved wrestling, always have. And then it really blew up in the 90s, and this thing called ECW started to really take off. And I learned that they're out of Hartsdale, New York, and that the creative force behind it, the owner, is a guy out of Scarsdale, just a few minutes from where I live. And so you're like, wow, this is like fascinating. And Stamford, Connecticut is just a drive up the highway for me. And I just got immersed in this world. And you see this hometown guy in Paul Heyman create this thing that transcends the business and influences the business on a different level was just so inspiring, exciting to me. Like, my dream was to work for Paul Heyman. And so, like, with internet taking off, you know, it was like 97-ish. I reach out to the Samoans, who were actually had a presence online. And there weren't a lot of websites at that point in time, like for wrestling schools and even promotions. So it was like WWE, a few others, WCW, not much more. So how do you get your foot in the door in this very, at the time, very closed out industry? It was hard to just get in there. Today, you just, you know, hit a direct message and you can get yourself booked possibly with no experience. It's crazy, but it was a different time. And I just keep harassing the Samoans, and they would brush me off. And then finally, Samu said, "Okay, you know, come in. We'll get you in here. We'll start talking. See where you're at." And I didn't want to be a wrestler. It wasn't what I was aspiring to be. My goal was to work for ECW and be a part of whatever I could in the front office for ECW. And the Samoans, over the next 2 or 3 years, brought me through their system. And I was able to start with like designing the posters, designing their website, and do whatever I could, figure out whatever, however I could help put up the ring or work then backstage. And there's someone that would end up not showing up, and I helped with that role. And then before you knew it, I was doing the matchmaking. I was booking the shows and developing the characters, and they had the confidence and the trust in me to do that, which at the time I didn't even think about it. Now I think back, I was like, I wouldn't let it, you know, 17, 18 year old guy just do that. So I'm incredibly gracious and appreciative for them just letting me probably make a mess and all of their ideas and talent as I stumbled my way through understanding what wrestling is and was. And along the way, I meet Gary Albright, who was a huge star in Japan for UWFI and then later All Japan Pro Wrestling. He was a collegiate wrestler for University of Nebraska. And he had married Afa's daughter, and got to meet him when he was up visiting his father-in-law, Afa, which is, you think your father-in-law can be intimidating. Imagine it's a wild Samoan. It's pretty intense. So we got to become really good friends. And he was at the point of his career where he was hoping to kind of wrestle a little less and help All Japan create the next generation of their American talent. So we started noodling on an idea that was eventually would be called Major League Wrestling. And the idea is it would be kind of what would end up being like at a OVW or FCW or the Performance Center, which is a very ambitious version of anything in developmental, but a farm league for All Japan Pro Wrestling. And by 98, we really had firm plans for this. And unfortunately then Giant Baba, Mr. Baba passed. And so things got complicated, but we still tried a path forward with Mrs. Baba, and we were developing it with the hope that in 2000, this thing would kick off. Sadly, Gary Albright passed in January 2000. So that went up in smokes. And then I'm like, well, ECW, here I come. And I start networking to try to get in there. The Samoans put in a good word. Other people put in a good word. And I'm at their Hammerstein show in January 2001, backstage with guys like Snitsky and many other aspiring wrestlers who go on to do things. And we're all hoping to get, somehow get some FaceTime. We're totally uninformed about what's going on inside ECW, that the company is, unfortunately, this is their last pay-per-view ever, Living Dangerously. And I had met Paul, I met Dreamer, and of course it's the day of a show, it's frantic and everything, but I was like, okay, this is where I'm going, it's going to happen. And then boom, they're out of business. A few months later, WCW gets acquired, and then like it's scorched earth. It's just the business totally gets rocked. So all my plans I've been trying to make happen for the last few years, something happens and it just doesn't work out. I then kind of think, okay, well, it's time to bet on yourself. And that's what I did. And I started to develop what would be the original plans for Major League Wrestling with a few adjustments and kicking off a show in Philadelphia in 2002. And that set the stage for what would then be my career. We had a great run with MLW, the original version from 02 to 04. Guys like Terry Funk were in there, Abdul the Butcher, Steve Corino, Barry Windham, CM Punk, Brian Danielson, Raven. I mean, Joey Styles was our commentator. We were based out of Westchester. Same ECW production team was doing our show. And having guys like Terry Funk bring me under the learning tree was just invaluable. And during that time, we were able to grow our show. I mean, we were on several regional sports networks, Fox Sports. We were international. We were available in the United Kingdom, Canada, Gaiora TV in Japan. We were on in India on Sony. For a 22, 23-year-old, I was kind of like, kicking beyond my coverage here. Outkicking my coverage by a lot, a large sum. But I was still young experience and learning my way. So Terry Funk introduced me to Gary Hart, realizing I probably needed some help on my booking. And I knew Gary vaguely from the Great Muda and growing up seeing him with Terry Funk in the NWA, but I really didn't know much of his career. And what I didn't know was that this man would have such an impact on me and over the years would become a mentor to me and teach me about matchmaking, promoting, developing talent. And just he is one of the best of the best. I mean, I've worked with Vince McMahon, Pat Patterson, Heyman, Jim Ross, some really sharp, bright, once in a lifetime minds. And Gary Hart's right in that conversation with a really sharp guy who was the booker for World Class, developed all those characters you see, One Man Gang, produced and made for the Freebirds what they were. So it was an incredible experience to learn and speak with Gary on a daily basis for years, and mentored me beyond just the pivot from MLW to working for WWE, but beyond that. And we had a lifelong friendship from there on out. Along the way, I went to WWE, tried to convince Gary Hart to join me. Dusty Rhodes was a long time friend of his and get him up there. And he was very resistant and enjoying retirement, and rightfully so. I had a great time out there at WWE. Again, it was kind of like getting paid to get your MBA in pro wrestling, working right under Vince McMahon, reporting directly to the chairman. So that was such an incredible opportunity in my mid-20s to do that and be a part of several WrestleManias, be a part of some wild times. But it was a great opportunity that I'm grateful for, all these years later. And from that went on to do a bunch of things outside of wrestling over the next few years. I produced UFC Fight Pass and Combate Americas and another MMA organization. So did that, was a consultant for Lucha Underground, was a consultant for Ring of Honor and the good people like Joe Koff and Gary Juster over there. And it was a podcast really with Conan and Saint Laurent that we started in 2012 that really got me back on that path to doing all those things with AAA. I was the president of their international affairs, along with all those consulting opportunities. It was just the podcast that got me back in wrestling. I thought I was done after WWE. I had moved on to do other things. And connecting with the fans, connecting with all these different people, it got me fired up. And then in 2017, I was doing Wale Mania with the rapper Wale. I had the light bulb moment, and with a lot of encouragement from Saint Laurent and Wale and others, relaunched MLW, and that's where we've been at since.
You mentioned Lucha Underground before, and you kind of have some aspects on your programming nowadays of that vibe, kind of with the MLW Azteca stuff. Anybody who's watched your show at all knows you've always had a taste of Lucha Libre in it and had a lot of styles and cultures and that kind of stuff. But what was kind of the thought behind going in that direction for MLW?
You know, I really loved my time with Conan, both on the podcast, but also working in AAA. And around, I think it was 2015 or 2016, which was right around the time I was working with Lucha Underground, which is kind of a hybrid thing. It wasn't traditional Lucha. It was like Lucha with all these other qualities, like you would see in a Rodriguez film, right. And kind of mashed together to make something very special and different, very cinematic. So I've always loved Lucha. I mean, the original MLW, we had La Parca, now LA Park, and guys like Shocker and so on and so forth. So I've always wanted that featured and represented in MLW. And what Lucha Underground did was expose the world to a whole new generation of great talent, Pentagon, Phoenix, and of course, Dario Cueto, who now is in MLW known as Cesar Duran. So I love having that representation. I think Lucha is sorely underrepresented in American wrestling. I think when you realize, where we are going culturally, to see it ignored to the level it is kind of shocking and ignorant. But, you know, I think wrestling at its best is a reflection of society. And if you can reflect that and what America looks like today and where it's going, I think you're going to be in a good place. When wrestling ignores it, it feels very passe very quickly.
And you've always been somebody who, rather than talking about like your creative process for wrestling, you were somebody, you're a booker, and you say that, you know, that's the process you want to be. So it gives you some interesting opportunities, you know, just to book differently.
You know, yeah. The more versatility you have, the better the product will be. And what gives you that versatility is having diverse talent and that both styles, both their backgrounds. I don't want all guys that just grew up loving wrestling. I want guys that grew up on the streets and found their way into wrestling because that way they were just happened to be really good at it. I want guys that have a fighting background from MMA. I want guys that have a background performing in front of different types of crowds. I want people that are just different. And I don't want the same guy across my roster. I don't want a bunch of clones. I want diversity in every sense. Where you come from, every quadrant of America should be represented. It shouldn't just be one type. And I think it's not just about, oh, we're checking off boxes for optics. I think you're going to get a better product because you're going to have all these guys with different life experiences, different journeys. So why not tap into that?
Who's kind of running hot in MLW right now? What's kind of the stories you want people to be following and just stuff that you're generally excited about with what you're producing right now?
So I would say probably the Detonation of the Dynasty, which was a long running collection of top talent. Originally it was MJF, Hammerstone, and Richard Holiday. And now recently it was Hammerstone and Holiday. Of course, a woman got involved and all of a sudden there were some issues. And before you knew it, there was a betrayal. And Hammerstone was betrayed by his friend, his dynastic bro, Richard Holiday, but with Alicia Toot in the mix. And now we have this confrontation, this escalation of these two on this collision course. Richard Holiday believes he's the brains and the brawn behind the dynasty, and Hammerstone is feels betrayed by his best friend. So it's a classic story in wrestling. It's a classic story I think a lot of people can relate to, is a, you know, a woman gets between two guys that were very tight, and the whole world changes in their viewpoint, and that's a huge story for us. And then you have some really exciting things going on with emerging talent like Alex Kane and the Boomai Fight Club. You have the Missing Opera Cup, which is a mystery that will be revealed in the weeks ahead. So we'd like to have a lot of different things happen at once. You have the Von Erichs fighting with 5150, which is Conan's new generation LAX. So we just constantly are spinning things, and you just want different directions happening simultaneously for characters and the storylines. But you have breakout talent like EJ Naduka, who was a can't-miss prospect, blue chipper that was released last year, tragically, who's like 6'8", was in the NFL draft a few years ago. He is a main event caliber talent, and his emergence in the next few weeks, few months, is going to be one to watch.
I was curious, you mentioned Conan before and St. Laurent too. You have some veteran wrestling personnel that you've had on board at different times in MLW, from Conan to Savio Vega, and I think even David Prazak on the women's side. Just to get that variety of experiences in there has got to be so helpful to the group that you're working with.
Yeah, and everyone has their different, you know, it's like you have a great coaching team with different guys with different, you know, different experiences that can contribute differently and uniquely, and that makes us a better company. I think anyone that says they're going to do it all, you know, that's, you know, hubris is a real thing in wrestling, and I've seen so many guys crash and burn because they think they can do it all, and yeah, you can for a while, but you're gonna be running on fumes. I rather surround myself with people that are frankly better than who I am at what I do, and it'll make our company better, which makes the product better, which then the fans have a better experience. You know, I've enjoyed over the years having some great people involved with this company, from Conan to Gary Hart to Terry Funk to Bruce Pritchard before he returned to WWE. So, you know, everyone I just mentioned has a totally different background, totally different way of doing things, and I think that's what makes this such a unique company, is that you get that experience, but you also get that access to these people. And so, like, you can go in our locker room, turn a corner, and you have the booker from AAA, and then you could go and turn left, and there's the booker for IWA Puerto Rico, and that opens up not only you to having access to the knowledge, but opportunity to work for them. You're not going to get that in any other company today.
All right, we're going to move to something we're calling the three count now. It's going to be three questions. They're going to be a little offbeat, but answer them as best as you can. You can invite three wrestling personalities over to dinner. Who gets the invite, and what do you want to talk about?
Oh, wow. Three personalities, living, dead.
Anytime, whatever. Yeah.
Anytime. Oh, man. Well, I would love to have, I mean, Pat Patterson was always just so much fun to be around, and such a gregarious guy, such a fun guy. You know, Pat's certainly a guy I would consider. I always enjoyed Jim Ross, you know, just the stories forever and so much knowledge. And also, if you're going to have dinner, that dude has some great taste and where to go for a good steak. Definitely a good get there. And you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, guys like the Gold Dust Trio from the 30s, you know, that's, you know, you got to Google that stuff to figure out who they are. But they kind of basically created the modern day framework for wrestling and you know, worked matches that were 100% worked and great finishes and structuring a match to have a great finish and building angles and stuff. So, you know, those kind of guys would be fascinating. But, you know, of course, you know, having one more conversation with Gary Hart would mean the world to me. So, you know, I can't just pick three guys, but if I guess I could, I would say, you know, Jim Ross, Pat Patterson, Gary Hart.
I definitely didn't see the Gold Dust Trio coming, I can tell you that. So that was not on my expectation list there. What is the craziest non-MLW atmosphere you can recall being in as a fan?
Oh, non-MLW atmosphere as a fan would be ECW, would be Belmar, New Jersey, when the Dudleys were, it was a show at Bar A, which was a bar, and it was outdoors in the back of block from the Jersey Shore. This is about 1998, 99 or something. I was kind of like in the business, but also a fan. Depending on where I was, you know, in the business, and then I was marking out in the crowd too, still at that age. And I remember they like lit a table on fire. It's like such a squished in environment, outdoors in the back. There's fake palm trees. This like I think they even had like one of those like tiki style roofs with like hay hanging off of them. Like, oh my God, I just want to like, can I climb that wall if this goes wrong? Like, you know, and those guys could get heat. Bubba and Devon could get heat. And it was like on the brink of rioting heat. And there was no barricades really in this show. It was really wild. And I just, those guys were masters of that at that point in time, contemporary heat. They were just, they used cheap heat. They used anything they could to rile up that crowd. And I remember that match ended with that, like a flaming table spot. And I'm just like, oh my God, the crowd was ready just to kill them. But in general, those ECW shows were just so wild and different, you know, Sandman and everything. And I think people say, oh, you know, ECW, look at all the talent they lost. And it wasn't the same. Like, yeah, but they always had the biggest star, and the biggest star of ECW were the fans.
Yep.
And you just being a part of that experience, it was like, it was probably like a lot of old timers say about like the Grateful Dead. He just tore from town to town of being a part of that experience, that community. And I think ECW had that. And I don't think I've seen it replicated since. It was just a cultural moment where it really hit culturally on a different level.
All right. What pro wrestling move would you react to loudly if you saw it being used in an actual street fight on the street?
I would probably say Tombstone Piledriver would be pretty nasty to see, especially if you put a little spin on it. I always like the spin, the twisting Piledriver. I wouldn't want to take it, but it certainly looks impressive.
Definitely. All right. Explain to us where we can watch MLW.
Easy question. You can watch us nationwide on cable and on satellite on BN Sports Saturday nights. The number one rated show on BN Sports. And you can stream us for free every Thursday, 8 p.m. on youtube.com/Major League Wrestling, our YouTube channel for MLW. Our shows go an hour, but sometimes a little longer. The YouTube version's a director's cut. The thing they won't let us put on TV, we make sure we put on the streaming version so we can't get into trouble for that. So check us out every week. It's free. You can binge us. You can watch us every week on MLW on YouTube and also on BN Sports.
Court Bauer, thank you so much for joining us today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I always love talking to you, and I was really glad to be able to do this.
Phil, always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. Special thanks to our guest from Major League Wrestling, Court Bauer, for joining us today. Check back again next week. Our guest will be the frontman of the Smashing Pumpkins, the president of the National Wrestling Alliance, the one and only Billy Corgan. Very excited to get him onto Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. As a kid who had a melancholy and infinite sadness CD that he wore out in high school, just seeing his involvement in pro wrestling is so fun to see. So yes, next week we will have Billy Corgan, Smashing Pumpkins Billy Corgan, president of the National Wrestling Alliance, on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. Have a great week, everybody.